sight like the oncoming coming tide with one burning thought. Will your arms
hold? Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're going to have our news roundtable here in this Monday morning. And cover a number of things, including, of course, the death of Sandra Bland in the jail cell in Texas that has gripped the country, at least some of the country, this part of the country anyway. We're going to look at what's been going on in Chattanooga and the attacks in Chattanooga, and also the march by the Klan and the Nazis through Charleston and the threats there, and what we mean by terror and terrorism in America. And what are we really worried about in this country and what is really facing us and more. And if we have a chance to get to other topics, like your friend of mine, Donald Trump, we will. We are here with Megan Sherman, who is a producer of the Real News Network and has been a frequent guest on the show for numerous years. Megan, good to see you in-house.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Richard Vatz, professor of rhetoric and communications at Taft University's Department of Instructional Leadership and Professional Development, author of The Only Authentic Book of Persuasion. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. That's the first time you have not made fun of my title. I appreciate that.
I tried to not. You brought it up. I mean.
Well, I don't like to hide things. I kind of like that.
Anthony McCarthy is with us, host of The Anthony McCarthy Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and part of the Center for Emerging Media, our the CEM's fellow. Always have him in the studio. Been my partner for years on this.
For a long time.
Airwaves.
I love being here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. Do call 410-319-8888. Before we begin, let me just remind you that on Thursday, July 23rd, this week, the statewide working group on public safety and policing, established by the legislative leaders in Annapolis, is hosting a town hall meeting from 4 to 8 p.m. The public will offer testimony on challenges, concerns, and opportunities to improve police-community relations, police training and hiring, and community engagement across Maryland. The town meeting hall will be held at the Legislative Services Building at 90 State Circle in Annapolis, Thursday, July 23rd, from 4 to 8 p.m.
May I make a criticism of part of your history that you went through?
If you have to. I don't want to get sidetracked on something we're not going to talk about, but what?
Well, Helen Thomas had a reputation of a series of anti-Semitic remarks, and she was supposed to be a journalist, and she lost a lot of her good reputation toward the end of her career because of that.
Well, I'm not so sure that she made anti-Semitic remarks. I mean, she made one remark about at the end of her career because she was pushed out, as she said, one too many martinis. and that was that the Israelis should go back to Poland. That's what she got in trouble for. But being critical of Israel is not being anti-Semitic.
No.
I am critical of Israel, and I'm not anti-Semitic.
As am I. But her remarks, get the hell out of Palestine, go back to Poland, I'm telling you that she was classically anti-Semitic in my view.
I don't think so.
One of my greatest honors is meeting Helen Thomas at the Correspondence Center when I worked at the White House in the Clinton administration. And I'd seen her so many times as a child, and to actually see this incredible woman in full flesh was such a great honor. And you said she was supposed to be a journalist. She was one of the greatest journalists in the history of our field.
We agree to disagree.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, and we can debate. I think it's an important question I have.
I do too.
She was somebody I remember right after I met her at the American Visionary Arts Museum a gala some years back, 2004 maybe, when she was honored by Rebecca Hofberger and the rest at AVAM. She said to me, "You have to be careful, Mark. They're going to come after us and try to move us out." Shortly thereafter, another radio station, remain nameless, did move us out. So she was also prescient.
That she was. I got to concede that one.
410-319-8888. Let's begin. I really want to, folks, do call in, please. I really want to hear your thoughts on Sandra Bland and what happened last week. And I can't remember a week that has gone by or a period that's gone by since we became aware of Trayvon Martin's murder that somebody unarmed and black in this country has been killed while in police custody or at the hands of police. Mm-hmm. And not just black men, black women too, obviously. And it has been, I mean, I got so overwhelmed that over the week, that when this happened, I think it was Friday night, maybe it was Thursday night, I wrote this on Facebook, just a piece I put together, and I will leave a part of it out, but I'll just read a little piece of what I wrote just about that, and we can talk about it. And yes, and it will play my card, but that's okay. And then we can hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888 and start with Megan Sherman when we come back. I wrote, heartsick, sick of this. It's always been with us. Just that now it's on our faces all the time. You can't turn away. You got to stare it in the eye. Got to say no. No more. No more. Sandra Bland, young woman involved in life and changing the world. On the rise. Cut down. 21st century paddy rollers in uniform, kidnapping another black woman in chains. Yeah, that's what it is. Exactly what it is. Megan.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reflective of my own personal sentiment as well. I mean, really, honestly, in the past, in the past 6 months, especially after the uprising or riot or whatever people want to call it, but it's getting to the point, I think, personally for me, where, like, when I, like, see stuff like this on Facebook or on the media, I got to take a couple days before I can, like, look at the articles or watch the videos or whatever. Comes out, because it's just starting to I'm starting to become desensitized by it, but also like hyper aware of it all the time. So every time any little thing happens, like, it's like I have an immediate emotional reaction to it, as much as I don't necessarily want to. But I think like the piece you put together kind of expresses like it's one of those things where it's like in your face all the time, so you have to address it. Like, you can't just ignore it. But yeah, it's pretty interesting, I guess, the time that we're living in currently.
I mean, we heard, I went to see Ta-Nehisi last Thursday last week that he spoke here at Union Baptist. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading his book. He'll be on the show Wednesday. And he was talking about, in the book, about black bodies in America being sacrificed, and that's the nature of this country and how he has to think about that. And one of the things he said was, being black means in America you live in fear. All the time. Not every second of the day, but you live in fear.
A good chunk of the day.
Right. You know, that the thing, exactly, the mm-hmm. things that happen. And that the black bodies are expendable. And I think this is something America may be having to look and deal with for the first time in a different way than it ever has before. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Sandra Bland's, killing. I mean, I know the people are saying the jury's out. Some people are saying because she died in her cell. But, I mean, the fact that the idea this woman killed herself is almost unfathomable given everything that we know.
Well, two things about this case that has struck me. And I like what you said, Mark, about America is finally have to look at this. Americans, I should say. Some Americans are looking at this in a very different way. The state's attorney there, the criminal, the correction system there, they are going to the nth degree to try to find out what actually happened. And the FBI is now involved. What they've already said is that the officer violated policy by stopping and taking her into custody, that was already a violation. But two things that I really want to quickly say, as I watch the family, I am convinced they are not going to let this go until they have an answer that satisfies their soul. Not satisfies the law, not makes sense, but satisfies the person they know as Sandra Bland and this reconciliation of her death. And if it leads to wrongdoing, I think we have to push until we get not an answer, but the answer. And if it isn't wrongdoing, but we will have done everything. The other thing is, I want us to be very cautious when we say that people can't commit suicide or wouldn't have committed mm-hmm. suicide. And especially where minorities are concerned, oftentimes in the families I've dealt with here that have been involved in the criminal justice system, whose sons and daughters have committed suicide or been thought to have committed suicide, I remind them it is possible. We are not immune to that great depth of sadness and difficulty and confusion that mm-hmm. leads to that. So let's not say that Sandra Bland could not have committed suicide. It is possible, but let's find the truth.
I don't think you want to be in the position where if she did commit suicide, that this hides the other racially disparate treatment that she got. In other words, if she was falsely arrested, if she was badly treated, and incidentally, if she committed suicide because she claimed she was depressed for a long time, this does not mean that she was treated well. So you don't want to let that be the dispositive event, which leads you to interpret that she was or was not treated badly or racially discriminated against.
And the thing I would add also, Mark, is when you say that we spend part of our day afraid, mm-hmm. I am 40-ish, and I hate to admit, there are times when I am terrified at situations in this city, when a police officer gets behind me and my license is good, my insurance is good, my tags are good, everything's good. But just like Sandra Bland's case, something can happen and escalate so quickly, and then there's only one person left to tell the story. It scares me. Sandra Bland is now gone. And so we've got to find the answer to this story. And I know there are not just African Americans, but a lot of African Americans who identify with that. I'm not known for doing a lot of wrong things. But when I have an interaction with the police or a situation that can escalate, my body is racked with fear.
Folks, go ahead, Megan. Don't go to the phone. Shalom, you're the first caller up at 410-319-8888. But let me let Megan
I was just
going
to just piggyback off of what Anthony was saying and talking about the Twitter hashtag that popped up over the weekend where people were telling their stories about if they were accosted by police officers, what they want people to do, you know, in case of that event. And it was, like, really heartbreaking to kind of listen to, like, to – I mean, because we know it, I guess, intrinsically as black folk, that people already have those, like, things running in the back of their head, kind of like that backup plan if something like that was to happen. But to listen and read people's actual, like, thoughts around that, like, because that's a possibility, like, and reading all of the people that were tweeting, it was amazing, like, on Twitter. I mean, in Twitter, Black Twitter has been, like, a huge part of the Black Lives Matter movement. But it was also just really kind of, like, sad to see a lot of people's reactions to that. And so, yeah.
Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Shalomar in Baltimore, you're on the air, line one.
Hi.
Good morning.
I'm calling in because yesterday I wrote on my Facebook some very similar thoughts that have been expressed, and I am passionate about black women and black girls, and that's what I do with my life. And one of the things I think is important to point out in this case of Sandra Bland is that many of us live depressed, live with post-traumatic stress. And it is simply because of the horrible conditions that we live in. It may be our health. It may be the education that we've received or not received. I think about myself. I was unemployed for a couple of years, and I'm just starting to work, and I've only been working 9 months. But I still live with lots of terror, just the phone ringing. How am I going to tell somebody I still don't have the money to pay a bill?
Mm.
Or I still don't have money to buy gas, or I still don't have money to buy groceries. And I live with depression and anxiety, and I take medication for those things. And as I said in my post yesterday, though I have never committed suicide, I have wanted to not be here, and I have wanted to disappear because it's just too much. It's one thing piled on after another, another thing piling up. And I imagine if, in fact, Sandra did kill herself, because she could have. It, like the other person said, it doesn't mean that her arrest was not was unjust. That's unjust. But there are many other things about being black and female every day that are unjust, and that I want justice for her and for me and for many others who are living lives that are just, it's too much some days. It's too much. And if I were just like her, just getting a job again, moving somewhere, having hope that things are going to be turned around, and I get arrested on some BS, that could be the straw. So that's just my comment.
No, Shalom, I think that what you said is very profound and moving, and I think that's also very real. But before I make my comment, you want to say something, Megan?
No, I was just agreeing.
Yeah. Her arrest, correct me if I'm wrong, involved what she claimed was a battery by the officer, right? That he placed a knee in her back and broke her arm. Am I incorrect on that? Doesn't she claim that? I mean, so this isn't just
slammed her head into the ground.
Slammed her head in the ground and put his knee in her back. Didn't break her back, but she did say he put his knee.
I thought he broke her arm or something. Okay, I mean, that, as I say, and is confirmed by the caller, there's a lot in this situation that you don't want to wrap it all up into one dispositive event. I mean, the suicide or the lack of suicide is not all that this situation is about.
I think that the caller made a very good point about the conversation that people are having, and I think Richard just hit it on the head. We should not get distracted by the suicide. And I know that sounds callous, but it really isn't. I think it is horrific if she did commit suicide, horrific if she did not. But the real question, and the family is pushing for, answers the legality of the arrest and what happened in those 48 hours that she was held over that weekend by the police. Now, they say there is cameras that are pointing to the outside of the cell, and they don't show anyone entering or leaving prior to her death, when she was discovered to be dead. Well, let's verify those things. Let's push for those things. Let's give answers. Sometimes we don't like the answers. Sometimes the answers don't fall into our scenario or our narrative. But let's find those out and let's bring justice to this woman. I mean, it broke my heart. And I agree. I will tell you, watching story after story after story, seeing it online, seeing breaking news, I have become so emotional. I burst into tears at another black woman, another black man, another black child dying. And we live in a country where there is always a question mark because we've now revealed the evil that exists within some of our police departments.
We're going to get a very brief break and come back. I want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. We'll tackle this and other issues surrounding all of this and other comments and thoughts. Please join us here at 410-319-8888. We're going to break here with Iron Butterfly in A Gotta Da Vida, which was released on this day in 1968. We'll be right back.
In A Gotta Da Vida, honey, don't you know that I'm loving you? In A Gotta Da Vida, baby.
Happy birthday, Santana. Born on this day in 1947. That's Black Magic Woman. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on what happened to Sandra Bland and the connections between that and some of the things we're about to bring up. 410-319-8888. And, you know, we don't know what really happened, as we were all saying. The family doesn't think she committed suicide still to this moment. Then she was talking to her sister shortly before. She talked to Bill Bondsman about to get out. All that was going on. Just got this job. But no matter how it occurred, it's like when you look at Freddie Gray, the police didn't beat him to death, but he died as a result of police behavior and died in their custody, right? Sandra Bland wasn't beaten to death by police, but she died as a result of their going after her, pulling her through the window of her car and slamming her to the ground and taking her to jail after she was just in this exhilarated mood because she had gotten a job at her school that she graduated from, Prairie View A&M, which is another historically black college in this all-white town in Texas. And so, that's the thing I think that we have to really begin to think about, and what these – if she hadn't been dragged out of that car for – I mean, you know, if you were just going to stop somebody for changing lanes without a signal – I mean, everybody would be stopped almost. I mean, it's insane.
Well, this
just makes no sense.
Yeah, this can be what the black community is called: driving while black,
living while black, existing. Mm-hmm. But your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Dr. Joyner, you're on the air. What? Okay. 410-319-8888. It's on the screen, so I'm not sure what's going on. Okay. Let me know. 410-319-8888. Come to these calls in a minute. So, again, I mean, I think that this is – when this keeps happening, I mean, I think that it's there's an awareness that may be brewing in America. I'm not sure completely it is, but something is happening.
But something is happening, and the Twitter stories that people tweeted were so powerful. I'm so glad she brought those up because it is something that's in the back of our minds. This is what I want you to know if I die in police custody. Mm-hmm. And the stories were absolutely heartbreaking that many people consciously thought about, if you find out that I have died in police custody, or if you find that I'm dead and it is the result of being in police custody, this is what you should know about me. It is really powerful. And I think Trayvon Martin, all the way up to Freddie Gray. And guess what, Mark? Tomorrow or next week or the week after, I hate to say this, there will be another unfortunate name that we add to that list. Before that, we did not have those conversations. White people did not have those conversations. Black people did not have those conversations. Latin, we didn't have those conversations. Something is changing in America.
Let me say where you and I disagree. I think Trayvon Martin was murdered. I do not think Michael Brown was murdered. So when people just list all the events that they assume go with this narrative, I say you've got to take them point by point.
No, you don't. Trayvon Martin was murdered. Michael Brown was murdered.
No, he wasn't.
Another unarmed human being shot down by police. And on top of that, police leaving his body
in the street,
right. On the ground, right. For 4 hours.
Right.
So I don't care whether we argue about whether he was murdered or not.
I do.
Point is, I don't.
Well,
the point is, I'll tell you why I don't.
Yeah.
The point is that the racist behavior of this country, of going, even the very beginning of it, whether it was Michael Brown being told in cursing him to tell him to get on the sidewalk, that started the whole confrontation. That the attacks on people in this country is what the larger issue is here. And that's why they're all lumped together. You can argue murder, no murder. The issue is that we are faced with a situation in America where every week somebody black and brown in this country, unarmed, is killed by the police, killed in the custody of police. That happens over and over again. I'm not even going to argue the point about Michael Brown, because it's a larger question that we have to face in this country, and not the kind of nitpicking
part of your strategy, Mark, is persuasion. And when you include items that are exceptions to what you're saying, you lose the ability to be persuasive.
Well, I would.
Can't argue that it's not that there was not violence perpetrated against Michael Brown. And what I think Mark is trying to say is basically that there's an overarching kind of environment of violence that black people have to live in and experience every day. And so I think that's kind of the main point that he's getting at.
And that you have to take it from the very root of the confrontation and in the context of the confrontations that went before it, mm-hmm. and will come after it. I understand persuasion, and you're 100% right. But the very act of saying get out of the street speaks to the history, and not just the history, the reality of living black in this country. Mm-hmm. And the fear that exists when that confrontation begins at an offset.
Because you can't just
walk
down the
street. That you cannot control it. That's right.
You can't just walk down the street in your neighborhood and exist. Like, that's the point.
Right. But I'm telling you, and I don't think we specifically disagree, but I'm telling you that when you include anything and everything in your examples without making these distinctions, that part of your audience is lost.
If you take, I don't think that we had them in the first place.
Let me just complete my point. If you take the Chattanooga situation, which is absolutely one of the most outrageous, nauseating situations in the country's history, you have a pure example there. When you combine that with saying, and Michael Brown, then you lose something in your persuasion. And I'm telling you, it hurts the argument. I mean, you can argue that there are elements of racism, but when you argue that he was murdered, you lose a lot of your audience. I'm just.
But Richard, I would disagree with you that we even characterize the horrific act that took place in Chattanooga as one of the most horrific in this country.
Yeah, I was about
history.
To say.
I mean, we have seen even in our lifetime things that were worse than what that man did. And my heart breaks for those Marines who serve in that Navy, that naval young man who served their country, died for no reason. But I'm not sure if I would characterize it as one of the most horrific acts that have taken place in the history of this country.
Yeah. But the only thing I was going to say was basically that I think that, you know, the audience that you're talking about that folks are losing, and I was going to make this point when, Anthony, we were talking about the times are changing and something's changing in America. I think that something is changing, but I do think that there's a large segment of the population that will never grasp the concept of the fact that there is racism in America. And it's because it's not beneficial for them to grasp that concept. Like, it takes them out of their comfort zone. It makes people uncomfortable in a way that they're not open to experiencing. And so I'm not interested in speaking to that audience anyway, because they're not about listening. Like, they're not trying to listen. They're not trying to understand another person's perspective. And so, you know, I think it's just kind of a waste of time in some instances to try to, like, change the way that you speak or change the way that you make your arguments for the sake of someone who isn't really interested in listening to you anyway. So
let me get to the phones. We'll come right back to everybody. 410-319-8888. People are calling in here. I want to hear your thoughts on this. Dr. Joyner, line one.
Hey, Mark. Yeah, I just want to make a couple of comments.
Please.
Most recently, I think the young lady who said you don't want to take the time to try to deal with people who are not listening. But the reality is we just can't give up on people. You know, we know that racism, and we know that white supremacy is systemic. We know that people who believe it, even unconsciously. But we have a commitment to try to help them begin to understand the enormity of the process and the fact that they are part of the problem. I think that, you know, I know it's difficult to get them to hear, but we just can't ever give up on them. The other piece I want to say is, in terms of how we deal with terror, let's remember this. The police, we can see very clearly, has been invaded by a Klan mentality. But now, terror is nothing new to black folks. I mean, you know, let's face it, my daddy had to deal with the lynchings in North Carolina, and there were lynchings in Maryland. We've been living with terror for the last 200 years. But I'm not going to accept the response that I'm going to live in fear. Because when you live in fear, then the terrorist has won. So the reality is, I'm going to go about my day. Now, I just got off the highway coming from New Jersey. I passed a lot of cops. And I wasn't sitting there, you know, every time I saw a cop, I'm going to grip the steering wheel. Oh, there's a cop. He may pull me over. He may shoot me. I'm not living like that. I'm sorry. We got to learn how to cope with terror better. Because, listen, I got to believe our ancestors cope with it better than we are. Now, we gotten soft. We got to the point where we just think everything, we want it to be nice and rosy. Well, the stuff ain't never been nice and rosy. We just got to be prepared to deal with this new brand of terror, because it's going to be with us for a while. And I disagree with a guy who says that, you know, you marginalize your case when you include things like Mike Brown. Well, granted, we don't know the details of that scenario. Mike may have been wrestling with the officer for his gun. But the reality is, Mike, in the final analysis, he was as dead as anybody else. Who knows what might have happened if Mike had been completely polite? Because Darren Wilson said, you know, he demonized the young man to begin with. Look at his comments. He referred to him as an it. He said, oh, he's like a monster. So this dehumanization of Mike Brown and the fact that he was a big guy and the cop was just scared to death, another he would probably shot him if he blinked his eye. He didn't have to reach for his gun. So I think all of these things are going on in this very complex new world we're living in. And the new world, you know, we know is created by these new demographics. As white people know that they're going to be a minority, as Asians and blacks come together and vote for a black president, I think white people are beginning to start feeling very shaky. And therefore, they're using the police officers to, you know, come after us. So we got to keep it all in perspective. It's a new era. But that's my comment. Forgive me for taking too much.
That's all right, Dr. Joyner. It was good to hear your voice, and I appreciate your thoughts and bringing your wisdom to our show. So it's good to hear you.
And I think that the one thing I would not necessarily disagree but point out about what Dr. Joyner said was that many people in this generation aren't given the history lessons that we were given in our generation and the generations that come before. They will tell you that racism up until – I don't want Richard to get sicked on me, but up until Trayvon Martin gave them a slap of reality in their face, this generation now understands, and I'm telling you, has a very low and short fuse to deal with this kind of racism that he talked about us just dealing with, living our lives and moving forward.
And you can see that in South Carolina.
You can see it in South Carolina.
That was the example that I misspoke on. I apologize. Mm-hmm. That was the worst. That was one of the worst events I'd ever seen. My apologies on that. But when you have this utterly despicable individual, Dylann Roof, who simply assassinated 9 wonderful citizens. You know, there you have an example, and that's why I say, and we're not going to end up agreeing on this. That's why I say, when I'm making the case, and you're making, I would not include Michael Brown when I talk about the Dylann Roof situation.
410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phones here and get your thoughts and ideas. Clarence, line 3, and then we'll go to Michael. Clarence, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. I had something else to say, but in listening to what the gentleman, your guest, just said, you know, that's the Dylann Roof is the product of a collective. You know, that's an individual act by him, but that's part of a collective consciousness of racism from a minority right now in this country. They're a minority, but that's just filtered down to him. Now, how is that consciousness reinforced? It's reinforced through politics. It's reinforced through the monetary system. It's reinforced. It just comes down. It comes down. So what are you talking about when you talk about breaking that collective consciousness up through the media also? How do you attack that so that that type of mentality isn't brought down where it manifests itself in the individual act? These police officers are keying into that consciousness, but their acts are individual acts, you know, but it comes from somewhere else. Now, you and I both know what we can do to cause physical harm to someone else. As they said, they bent him like a pretzel. Those police officers should have been well aware that the kind of force that they were using on him would either cause harm or death in any of those instances. So that's murder, in my opinion. Thanks, Mr. Steiner, for, you know, venting a little bit. Thank you.
Good. Thank you for calling in, Clarence. Let me get one more call and come right back to the panel. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this? And we're going to talk about the juxtaposition of what happened in Chattanooga to what's happening right now in South Carolina when we talk about what terrorism really is in America and how we classify that. 410-319-8888. Michael, line 2, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Michael.
I turned to your show, Mark. I'm just really saddened again to hear you guys talking about this. Like, wow, it's happened again. And it's to the point now, I'm starting to think this is like a trend of this year, just killing, you know, just killing unarmed folks and police officers. Like, I tell you, like, there are two instances I just want to give you. At the time, it was a joke and it was funny, but now I'm thinking, like, wow, it's really serious. So I remember one time I was in the car, I was driving with my friends. I got pulled over for having one of my taillights out. And when I saw the cop getting out of the car, I said to my friends, hey, guys, take your camera out to make sure that anything doesn't happen. You know, at the time I said that, I was like, wow. And now I'm thinking about it, like, it's really sad that, you know, I actually meant that. I was like, wow, I don't want nothing to happen. And then every time I see a police officer, it's funny that the caller, like a few callers before me, mentioned this. Every time I see a police officer on the road driving or just standing around at an event, I want to say hi, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid to say hi. Like, I feel like I should say hi to somebody that we automatically call on when we need help. Like when we need help or when we're in disturbance, we say, somebody call 911. Like, we're quick to say that, but at the same time, like, I feel like all of our communication shouldn't just be through distress and pain and emergencies, but it should be like a one-on-one communication. And we've had this conversation. How many times have we had this conversation?
Right.
How many times have we had that conversation over the course of this year? Like, the communication mm-hmm. throughout the police and the public, there's like a fear, there's a lot of tension. So, yeah, that's just something I noticed. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Michael.
I mean, the only point I'd make is that this year, I've become very, very pessimistic about our ability to stop lone wolves, and whether it's racial or whether it's anti-military or whether it's simply crazy people who want to kill anybody. I mean, I used to think this. I used to think, well, you know, they have all of these strategies that we're worried about with Al-Qaeda, but, I mean, what happens when individuals want to act on their own and they have the ability to kill 10 to 20 people? You know, what can stop them? And I don't have an answer for that, and it's very discouraging.
And I agree with him. What we have is a situation where there's so much information available. In the case of Chattanooga, so much information is available, and people are trying to get to the root of why this man did what he did. They use the word radicalized. Well, you can become radicalized sitting alone in your bedroom, sitting alone in your home. And what causes these lone wolves to act, I don't think we'll ever be able to stop that or prevent it.
Because it's varied.
It varies.
Yeah.
As much as the human spirit.
Well, let me push the envelope a little bit here. Okay. I'll see what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. And I think it's not a question of lone wolves. Mm. I think that's what we do in America is we kind of want to – we hit the lone wolf thing mm-hmm. a lot. I think this has more to do with the founding of this country, what is in the bone marrow and tissue of this country that erupts in different ways and for different reasons. You know, I think it's directly tied to everything from the redlining that happened here that began in Baltimore City in 1911 to the policies now that keep poor people and poor black people, specifically in poor black neighborhoods. I think it's the same thing that the racist mentality of our nation runs so deep in who we are, we don't even know we are when we are. And that's the problem. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't think it's just a question of a lone wolf. You never can take somebody who goes off and does something that, you know, I had a confrontation with a man the other day in a car. And I thought I was going to have to figure out whether or not I was going to be able to get out of there alive or without a fight because he was obviously a madman. But, I mean, but that can happen. But I think this is more than just lone wolves, Megan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was talking to somebody about I don't know the gentleman's name. I think he was in California that shot up the school. He was, like, I guess, upset about women or something like that. He purposefully shot all those women. But when I was talking to one of my coworkers about that, when the Dylann Roof situation happened, and we were talking basically about how somebody asked me, like, do I think that that's about race or something like that? And I was like, I think that it is, and it's not all at the same time. Like, I think with the situation in California, that's a perfect example of how that's one person's personal interpretation of how society kind of views women. He thought that women should be his property and that he should be having sex with women. And since he wasn't, he felt like it was necessary for him to go out and kill some women. Or, I mean, those misogynistic kind of viewpoints just manifested itself through his actions. And so, I mean, you could look at both of those situations, the Dylann Roof situation and the situation in California, as individual acts. But I think that, like you said, it's too easy to do that. Like, we do that a lot in America. It's just like, oh, that was just that one crazy person that did that thing, and we don't know why they did it. But not really looking deeper at, I guess, some of the things that societally we kind of perpetuate on our own, like, individual terms. Sometimes we try to ignore that, or it's too much work to do.
And I mean, one of the things, Paul Rucker just texted me, the artist here in Baltimore, who's originally from Seattle and did that amazing exhibit at Creative Alliance not long ago and is working on new pieces now. On the connections between the killings today and the lynchings of yesterday, and just very powerful piece that he put together there. And he texted me, it's in the bone, marrow, and tissue. And he put quotes around that, and I've been using that terminology a lot. And, I mean, just one of the things I think I'd like to hear what our listeners think at 410-319-8888 before I kind of bring us into this question of the Chattanooga and the killing and what's happening in Charleston and why they may or may not be connected, we can wrestle with that, is that the race and race, first of all, there's a supposition that there's a thing called white. And white doesn't exist. White is made up. White is a
social construct.
Yeah, as is black, as is race. And we have the social construct of race that has begat its bastard child called racism.
Racism, yes.
That is so deep in the bone, marrow, and tissue of this society and the world, that's how we have to begin to think about how we talk about it with each other. It's not just simply a question of, oh, you're a racist, I'm not a racist, yes, I am, I have friends who are black, no, I don't, blah, blah, blah. It's so deep in where we are that that we are maybe that what's happening now will make us face that and begin to talk about it with people who are willing to talk about it.
Let me just say this. I lived in Nashville, Tennessee for 2 years, and during that 2 years, some friends of mine and I visited the National States Rights Party house in Birmingham, Alabama, and they said to me, by the way, make sure you don't tell them you're Jewish. And we walked in, and I have never seen such hatred toward blacks and Jews as I saw in that visit. And when I was at Vanderbilt University, when they had let in their first African-American, who was a very good friend of mine, by the way, and he had terrible things done to him. At this is one of the most progressive schools, Vanderbilt, in the country. And I don't know that you had the kind of violence that you have now. To say that it's just due to racism, I mean, then you're always going to have it. There's also an aspect of some of these people gain existential significance because their lives are so meaningless. This roof guy, I mean, a completely uninteresting person except for his hatred, you know. And so everybody talks about him, and the media plays into it, and the media covers him, just like the media covered Cho at Virginia Tech. You know, they become significant, whereas before they were utterly unimportant, uninteresting people. So this is part of my pessimism, that I don't think that this is ultimately stoppable.
I guess I'm heartbroken by this idea that this is in our bone marrow, and it really is. That's an honest statement. I knew very close friends with Commissioner Batts. And I hope to have this similar relationship with Kevin Davis, because I believe that sometimes they need people to tell them what exactly is going on. And their command staff won't tell them, but someone who lives it every day may tell it. When I speak to police officers when I'm in a store, I'm walking down the street, they look at me like I'm an absolute idiot. I can have a three-piece suit on, or I can be wearing jeans. But when I say good morning or I say hello to them, they're not used to black people speaking to them. And that is deep, that we live in a society where people tell us that they swore to protect and defend us, but courtesy throws them off their game. You know, that frightens me.
Interestingly, at Towson, it's the exact opposite. Mm. Blacks and whites who don't know each other always say hello when they cross each other on campus.
Except
well, Towson, I went what to Towson you been at? I don't know if I went to that. What university?
Yeah.
I don't know if we're talking about the same school then, because I haven't heard some real racist stuff pop off at Towson.
Well, I'm not saying there's.
Because you went to Towson, right, Megan?
Oh, heavens no. No, heavens no.
What do you mean, heavens no?
Heavens no.
What's that?
Not even no. No, definitely not.
That's right.
Yeah, no.
Right.
Couldn't get in?
No, I wouldn't go if I could. If they gave me a free ride, I probably wouldn't go, really. Because, yeah, no, this is too much. I mean, one of my closer friends was telling me about this one instance where he was in a class at Towson. And, I mean, it's not really the person lethal shots at Towson, but since we're talking about it, he was saying that he, like, leaned over to ask a girl for a pencil. And she just, like, looked at him real casual and was just like, oh, I don't talk to black people. Like, why are you even speaking to me? Like, that kind of. And I've heard a lot of instances like that at Towson.
I lived
in Towson, too.
That
so.
Is utterly incongruous.
Just, I don't think that's true either.
Yeah,
I'm not
sure.
Oh, I mean, you have a little rosy picture here.
Yeah, and a little bias.
Where a white person in class says to a black person in class, I don't talk to black people. That is utterly.
Oh, but you yourself, Rick, when you were a couple years back.
Vanderbilt. That's
No.
Years.
We're sucked into being a faculty sponsor for a racist group.
Oh, yes.
And then left,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it is there.
It is
possible. Yeah. Yeah. Right, right. Right. It is there in tiny numbers.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm just saying. As long as I'm just saying, you can't dispute it.
What I'm saying here is that this is something that goes beyond Dylann Roof losing his mind.
Yeah.
This has to go to This has to go to the question of the hundreds of people marching through Charleston who identify as Klansmen and Nazis, who are in that world as the crazy tip of it all. But beneath it is not the lone wolf, but is the history of this country and the history of redlining and the history of discrimination in courts and the history of underfunding city schools and seeing now what as we're watching here, nobody wants to call it what it is, while we're watching now in Annapolis the defunding of things that have to do with Baltimore and putting them into white rural areas. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's so deep that we don't even have to call it by its own name, because we're afraid to call it by its own name. We don't want to wrestle with what we're actually seeing in front of us.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
But it's more than that. I mean, I think that we're going to come. We have to take a break now. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Yes? Take a very brief break. We're going to come back. 410-319-8888. So tell me how different or the same what you think's happening in Chattanooga. I mean, what happened in Chattanooga is to what we see happening in Charleston at this moment. What is terrorism? What does it mean? 410-319-8888 is the number. We'll be right back, so stay with us. Do You Believe in Magic? The Lovin' Spoonful. Released on the stand 1965.
It makes you feel happy like an old-time movie. I'll tell you about the magic and the free your soul. But it's like trying to tell a stranger about a rock and roll. Do you believe in magic? Don't bother to choose if it's jug band music or rhythm and blues. Just go.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Bob Dylan, Like a Rolling Stone. Came out on this day in 1965. Yes, indeed. I'm Mark Steiner right here on your source for Cool Jazz and More, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And you at 410-319-8888 with your ideas and thoughts. Here with Megan Sherman, producer at the Real News Network. Dr. Rick Vatz, who is a professor of rhetoric and communication at Towson University. And Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here in WEAA, and you, 410-319-8888, to join in this conversation. So, you know, when you look at what happened right now with the demonstrations in Charleston and the tragedy of what happened in Chattanooga, and the kind of what that sets off in America, and this Kuwaiti-born American who shot down, young Palestinian man who shot down these Marines. I mean, this, the question of terror, homegrown terror, is one we wrestle with a lot in America. It's been happening. Timothy McVeigh was homegrown terror. The Ku Klux Klan and the Paddy Rollers are homegrown terror. This guy, homegrown terror. So, what are your thoughts on how these things are connected or not, Anthony?
Well, I think they are connected, Mark. But you have to be very careful. To pay honor and to be distinct, be very distinctive about what happened in Chattanooga. I believe that ISIS and the influence of their propaganda is probably right now one of the most dangerous things that Americans are facing. And I don't think we begin to see how far it's going to go. But we have to admit, and people, we've gotten so stuck in, liberals especially, stuck into everybody's right to say what they want, and I will go to court, and I'll fight for the Klan's right to march, I'll fight for this. But I tell you, Mark, they are terrorists. And what they believe now, the people who marched in South Carolina, I said, if I'd been down there and they had said some of those things, I would have been the headline because I would have jumped right in. And they would have gotten what they wanted. They would have gotten my reaction. Would have been, and I can't fight. I am the worst fighter in the world. They would have beat me to a pulp, but I would have jumped in. They are so dangerous to they are not to the conversation that we're having. I'm hopeful, as everybody said, about the conversation America's having. They are dangerous because I saw 6 and 7 and 8-year-olds screaming nigger in that videotape. So we know they're not there to defend any heritage. They're not there to defend any fabric of a Confederate flag. They're there to perpetuate hate and violence let loose on America. And we refuse to call them terrorists, but they are terrorists. They need to be watched. They need to be monitored. And I know my liberal friends are going to get mad to me, but sometimes we have to shut down those groups and not allow that poison into the American discourse.
Megan, go ahead.
I like them, though. I like them a lot. Like, I agree they're terrorists and they did wrong, but I like them because, like, I personally, if I had my choice, I prefer overt racism versus covert racism. So I like that you know, the majority of white Americans, like backwoods cousins, is out there like really saying what they talk about at the Thanksgiving dinner and at Christmas and whenever, you feel me, the family get together. Like, I like that they out there, because if they weren't, then that part of America would be invisible to most people, because people don't want to admit, like, oh, no, and now ain't nobody own slaves, now ain't nobody family members racist, don't nobody say nigga no more. But we know that that's not the case. We know that there is a small, but they happen to be the small segment of our society that's crazy enough to go out and say it in the streets and on TV, and you know what I'm saying, like, but I appreciate the fact that they exist, because, like, if they weren't out there, then people would just be like, oh, what racism, what you talking about, that don't exist no more. And so
But what about the misdirection that they were marching for the heritage of hundreds and thousands of men who gave their lives for Southern pride and a mission that they believed in? That's not what they were there for.
No, you always want to announce your source as being something honorable. And I don't think anybody buys that. And the despicableness of having eight-year-olds spew out these language. The one thing I'll say is I don't think that necessarily has legs. I don't think the eight-year-old who is spewing out these racist epithets necessarily becomes a 25-year-old who wants to kill somebody.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it could. You know, it could. But I don't think that's a necessary connection, because as people grow older,
he could just become a police officer.
I think that's a cheap shot.
Well, I think that's it may be a cheap shot, but I think that gets real sometimes.
I'm sorry. That's
I wouldn't call that a cheap shot.
Why would you call it a cheap shot when we can give you case after case?
Because it is not typical of police officers to be that way, and to say this 8-year-old could just become a police officer as if police
may
officer
not be typical.
Represents all. No, that, I'm sorry.
But Richard, you and I both know that they have gone through the emails of police officers and found where they talk to each other and they use that language, where they talk about going out and getting black people. So we know, and I'm a big supporter of the police department, but I have to tell you that we know. Well, I speak reality and truth.
So you don't think that there's white people on police forces that call black people niggas or have ever called black people niggas?
I don't think that was the issue I just raised. I said you were making a cheap shot condemning all police officers.
And I didn't say anything about all police officers. I just said it's a possibility that 8-year-old could become a police officer.
I'm sorry, that's disingenuous. You're attacking
well, when we look at the federal government, which is kind of investigating a lot of mosques right now because of the potential with ISIS in America. So I wonder if that means that the federal investigative forces should be investigating Southern white Baptist churches looking for Klansmen and terrorists that come out of there.
Perhaps.
Or are we just going to investigate mosques?
Only brown people can get investigated, allegedly.
What do you all think? 410-319-8880. I'm serious. I mean, I come from a family where the white Baptists were in my family, my grandmother, and I used to go to Baptist church with her, white Baptist church with her sometimes when I was a kid,
and you turned out fine.
Well, that's because I ended up in a black Baptist church. I learned how to really do it, but the reality. I mean, so I said it kind of tongue in cheek, but we are talking about investigating mosques in America. Yeah. But I'm serious.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I mean, the racism that comes out of institutions that believe, as you do deeply, in Jesus, right, Anthony?
Most definitely.
Should we be investigating them as well? Should they be followed the way we follow mosques?
I mean, I think about it like this, right? Like,
why not?
When you were making the point earlier about kind of talking about, I guess, when I think about racism in America, it's not so much about the people who, the KKK folks that are outside in front of a state building yelling nigger. It's about the people who allow that to exist in their space. You know what I'm saying? Like, so for instance, like, if there was a Muslim Islamic group that was like out having a rally, like forget America, like that would not even be close to tolerated in America. That would never, ever, you would never see that happening, where it was a Islamic group out demonizing white people or demonizing Americans in general. That would never take place. So why is it acceptable for a KKK group to be out in front of a state building demonizing black people and demonizing the American flag or whatever, or I guess building up the Confederate flag? Like,
tell me what the word acceptable means in that.
Acceptable, like I'm saying, like, if what do you think the American public's reaction to an Islamic group demonizing America, having a rally, demonizing America or demonizing white people?
Those people were despicable.
No, but I'm saying, what do you think the actual physical reaction to that type of rally would be?
I have no idea. I imagine it would be whatever the reaction is to any crazy group. I mean, you know, the Ku Klux Klan is considered despicable by every human being I know.
Mm. Well, I think that one of the things, Mark, remember the videotape of the man being beaten down here in it was right off of Waverly, where he was beaten by the police.
On
Green Mountain Avenue.
Right.
And I said to the commissioner when we were talking about it, the real problem you have is not that officer that was swinging those punches. The real problem you have, Commissioner, are those officers that are standing around watching this happen. That's the real problem. And that's what makes me afraid oftentimes. That's the real problem.
You can get rid of the
cop
who threw the punches, but you're not going to get rid of the cops who didn't intervene stop him from beating the man for no reason.
Every particular example you give, I don't have trouble with. But I can tell you that where we disagree is that you think this is representative of police. You know, I know you'll say mine is not representative either. It may not be. But I know lots of police. I know police in Towson. I know police in Towson University police. And I can tell you that I don't believe there is one single member of that group that is like the police you are describing. So I think it happens. I think it occurs. I think it's a big deal. I don't think it's representative.
I'm not sure. I'm going to go to the phones here. Let's get some callers in. But I'm not sure even what representative means. I don't think that's the issue either. We all have personal stories about police. Yeah. I have a nephew who's a cop. I know he's not a racist. I know he grew up in a multiracial world, and he's one of those guys who can talk things down because he believes he can do a good job. My friend Rick Puller was a policeman for 20 years in the city. I know he was a decent guy and will remain a decent human being. I know lots of decent cops. I also knew guys who are out-and-out racists, and there's a lot of them, not just one or two. There's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with them in my home as they came to my house. I mean, they were all over the place. So both are there. The problem is beyond them. It's the system itself. It's what Anthony just said. It's not the cop that threw the punch that beat that man up in the corner, kept punching him in the face for no reason. It's the seven or eight policemen around who didn't intervene and say, we don't do this, right? And that's the problem.
In that particular sociology. So you have those eight people, hypothetically, who are like that.
Not hypothetically.
But that are.
Watching them.
No, I'm not saying it's hypothetical what you talked about. I'm saying it's hypothetical to say that they represent police and different police sociologies.
It's not a word game, Rick.
I'm not playing a word game.
It's a reality that there are large amounts of people in the police who have racist attitudes towards black
people. What percent? Give me a percent.
I don't know the percent. I just know that, give you an example, and then we're going to go to the phones. We got to get some callers in here. That one of my old producers, who is white, who had a car problem on Charles Street near North, stopped. And when she was stopped, this is Cricket Arison. And when she stopped, and the police came over and asked for help, and a black guy was talking to her and went away with Cricket about what was wrong with the car. And then they came over, all seven of them sitting around the car, started making black jokes because they thought they were safe doing it in front of a white woman. That kind of stuff is pervasive. It's deep. And that has to be dealt with. I'm not saying you can't deal with it, but I'm saying it has to be dealt with.
So where do we disagree?
Because it's you're trying to look at these kind of specific ways of saying, is this emblematic of?
Right.
And I'm saying, yes, it is.
And I'm saying, no, it isn't.
All right. Okay. Well, then that's that's part of life. We can look at the very same thing and not see the same thing. 410-319-8888. Andrew, you're on the air, line one.
Hello, sir.
Hi, Andrew.
Somebody had mentioned about approaching the police with kindness and love and kind of overwhelmed them. That's the right idea. The thing is, you all are approaching a problem that's really a spiritual problem. Most of the problems in our world are spiritual, and there are beings that feed on hate and fear, and they're using computer modeling to produce it. And if you all look at it from a spiritual perspective, you realize that this situation is being created on purpose by beings who are feeding on the fear and the hate. And that's the way to approach it, is to approach these beings in a spiritual way. As for the police, if you overwhelm them with love and courtesy, they won't know what to do. They'll only have to reply in the same kind of way. But the approach you are using isn't going to work, because the problem is spiritual. And I know it's going to be hard for you to reply to, so I'll...
No. I think that you... I don't think it's hard to reply to that. I think that that is very real. And I think that, that I think we need more of that in our existence, more of that in our lives. I think that approach helps. And what you're saying is not unfathomable to me. But I also think that, you know, when we were talking earlier about the question of percent matters, I think it's a question of percent. I think it's a question of the people who have a huge amount of power and what they do with that power. And given that, they need to be held to a higher standard than a regular person. So it's not a question of how many police are or are not. It's a question of the power they have and how you address that. 410-319-8888. But I believe in what you're saying. I think we do need to things. I mean, approach the world without loving kindness is how I think we have to approach the world in every step we take. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Russ. You're on the air, line two. Hi, Russ, you there?
And this is Mark?
Yes.
Yeah. Greetings to you and your guests.
Greetings.
How are you doing?
It's really nice to hear Anthony again. Mark, I'd like to just say that the crux of the matter is, we're never going to be able to have a viable conversation about race and race relationships as long as Caucasians feel it necessary to defend the indefensible. And every time we have a conversation, we say, white guy did this, white guy did that. They feel like it's a personal attack on the whole Caucasian race, which it is not. We are 150 years of sesquicentennial beyond the Civil War. And here we are still in the same place rhetorically. I mean, when does it end? The Confederacy was defeated on the battlefield. That battle flag and everything that it stands for is lost. Its flags, when you lose a war, they are furled, cased, and put in museums. Simple and plain. So why all of that? But what I really want to get at is with this police issue, because it's very important. If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the second need beyond physiological is safety and security. We depend on the police for that. And I want to ask Richard directly, do you remember Mark Furman?
Yep.
Do you think he was typical or atypical? Because I think he is still represented vastly across police forces. And I wish you'd come go with me, get in blackface for a couple of hours and see how it works out when blacks and the police encounter one another. We need one another. We're inextricably linked. So we need to get beyond the foolishness that all white guys are good guys and all black guys are bad guys and that kind of nonsense, and look that, hey, we got good and bad on both sides of the coin here. And what we need to do is have the good people come together in the middle and figure out who is who so we can get our society right. Mark, let me finish by saying this. I think this is a classic case of cognitive dissonance. Just yesterday, 60 Minutes repeated a piece on rare earth and the control that China has on that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 20 years now, you and I have been talking about borrowing money from China. And right now, the world debt is about $180 trillion based on the last figures I saw. Guess who 10% of that debt belongs to? Over $18 trillion. The good old U.S. of A. We have serious issues to deal with. And if we don't come together, we the people of the United States of America, beyond the Confederacy, beyond the Ku Klux Klan, beyond the Black Panthers, and get it together, we're going to be cooling. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much. We're almost out of time in this segment. And I'm trying to get a feed here from my director across the glass. We should take one more call now if we can. We will at 410-319-8888. But I also want to get some closing thoughts here from our guests as well before we have to take a break and move into another subject. And someone wrote in, let me just read this real fast, because it has to do with Helen Thomas. I'm not sure what the person's name is, but from the email's name. But Hi, Mark. Please put Helen's drunken remark in context. She's a Lebanese woman, so the Israeli-Palestinian conflict affected her directly. I have heard Israeli journalists say ugly things about Palestinians and other Arabs, too, i.e. mowing the lawn, in reference to massive deaths of Palestinians in the West Bank. And we'll be talking about that one-year anniversary of the Israel-Gaza war in this next segment. Closing thoughts from our guests, very quick.
Very quick. I'm a person of faith, and my faith dictates that we proactively move in the direction to spread love, not evangelize, not recruit, but to love. That's what we have been commanded to do. And I think that love does, that's my hope, love does have the power to overcome all of these distinctions. But oftentimes I have to muster my love up against a real cynicism and a reality that we deal with every single day.
Well, go ahead, Rick, and then we'll go to Megan.
I think that this has been a really good discussion, and I think some of the points at issue came out very well. I don't think we agree on everything. I think our basic values are very, very similar. Helen Thomas, to point the bad journalists and say there are other bad journalists, well, that's true, but so is she.
Just people out there, keep your head up, try not to get shot. Basic stuff. I don't know what to say, really. The cynicism and the pessimism is there, but still got to keep it moving, so do that.
Do we take one more call or do we go, Steph? Yes? I'm not sure. I'm waiting for 410-319-8888. Let's go to Hank. You're on the air, line four. Very quick thought, Hank. Very well, Hank. We only have like a minute.
Here's my thing, right? I've had a lot of deals with the police, right? Now, I'll say this. If in compliance and being submissive to them, right, they very rarely bother you because that's what they want. They want you to be submissive to them. But however, within a crowd, I noticed it on both sides of the race, right? You always have one officer who's going to go above and beyond and be that blue cop, right? Like, for instance, right, I had one officer take me in a paddy wagon to his house, go in his house. I won't say where he live at. Sat in there for at least long enough time to watch the game, which was on TV. Then I had another officer who was in the paddy wagon. I said, look, my arm is bothering me. I really got to go to the bathroom. Can you take me straight to the booking? That man took me straight to the booking, right? I had a white officer, they were two, Wolf and Krauss, right?
Right.
I was in a situation with another officer, which was called the German, right? The German was harassing everybody in my hood. I said, look, Wolf and Krauss, right? Y'all know me. This man is telling me give him something or he going to take me down, right? Wolf and Krauss like, look, man, we know you. We know what type dude you is. Go ahead on and take whatever charge you got. Don't be that man's confidential informant. That's not you. You don't be in a gang like that. You don't be in the street like that, right?
So
those were white officers, right?
Hank, we're almost out of time here in the segment. I have to ask you to cut the story a little short and just get to the point. I'm sorry, brother.
Point is, I'm saying, when dealing with officers, you always got to know that if you give them what they ask for in the beginning, right, they generally disarm themselves. You got to disarm them before they arm them or ratchet this.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying.
Hank, thanks so much. We'll get one more caller here, then we do have to go to a break because we have to get to our next segment of 410-319-8888. We just had a flood of calls, so I'm trying to get at least a couple listeners and have a final shot. Charlotte, line two, you're on the air.
Yes, Mark, just a minute. Let me take out a speaker. Okay, thank you.
Well,
I want to thank all of you, and hi to Anthony as well as you. And I wanted to thank Professor Batts for being on the show. That takes a lot of courage. But I want to also speak to you, Professor Batts. You are illustrating the insidiousness of racism because you're not getting it. It underlies everything. And I really urge you to go deeper and try to understand what's happening here. Baltimore Racial Justice Action, go to that website, .org, has an excellent course on racism for white people, and I really urge you to do that. But racism underlies everything in this country. And thank you for being on the show, and please, please pay attention to what's going on here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call. And I think we do have to, and just as a close with this, I think that we do need to in this country, especially in the what we call the white world, and that doesn't really exist, that we need to get under this with race and have an honest conversation inside to change what's happening outside around us. So I think that's correct. And I do thank you all for this. Has been a great show. My dear friend Rick Vatz, the author of the only authentic book on persuasion. There is no other.
There you go. I knew you wouldn't let it go.
What can I say? My new good young friend Megan Sherman, producer of the Real News Network, who's doing some amazing work out in the field and bringing stories in and bringing her analysis in, which is she's really very strong. If you catch her work, please do. We'll link to some of it on our website. Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show on WEAA right here every Thursday night at 7 p.m. And a host here on the Mark Steiner Show. You may be hearing him, I think, maybe next Monday sitting
next
in
Monday, I think.
For me. He is also the Center for Emerging Media's fellow. And so we thank all of you. We're going to take a very brief break, and we're going to come right back and tackle the Middle East, look at the Iran deal that came up, but also this first anniversary of the Israeli-Gaza war and what that means and more. Stay with us at 410-319-8888. We are going to break with Surf City. Jan and Dean hit number one today in 1963. Surf City.